Good afternoon, everybody. It's me, Kevin Stevenson. Thanks for joining me on I Don't Care with, of course, me, Kevin Stevenson. Always appreciate you joining, and got to remind you as well, don't forget to follow us on Spotify, iTunes, YouTube. Hey, I'm on all the social media channels, LinkedIn, just follow me wherever, and you'll be able to catch I Don't Care in a lot of different platforms. So my guest today is Andy Flanagan. He's the CEO of Iris Telehealth. They're a behavioral health company that does, obviously, telehealth. Andy, welcome to I Don't Care.
Thank you very much, Kevin. It's great to be here.
Nice having you. It's always nice to talk to somebody in Texas. You know, Andy and I were talking a little bit before. He's been in the great state for about 7 years now. Andy, go ahead and tell my audience what you said about it being the easiest
place we've ever lived.
See that, you know, I like to hear that as a Texas native. So we appreciate hearing that. So Andy, tell my audience a little bit about you, your background, and then tell us about Iris Telehealth.
Thanks, Kevin. So I'm, been in healthcare my entire career, married for 34 years to wonderful children who are now married. And so, you know, I'm the kind of person that's been focused on doing good while you do well. And healthcare has really afforded me that opportunity to feel like I am contributing positively to the world we live in. So I'm super grateful to be in my role leading Iris Telehealth. We are a behavioral health medical group. We have 430 employed clinicians,
okay.
Several hundred corporate employees that support all those clinicians. Mm-hmm. Customers. Our customers are health systems, they're community mental health centers, and federally qualified health centers. So we do 100% behavioral health, 100% with the provider community. We are two-thirds prescribers, one-third therapists. We're in emergency departments and medical surgical floors. We work in outpatient settings. And so, you know, when you think about behavioral health, we are in many cases the escalation team. Mm-hmm. So we see all diagnoses, all demographics. We're in 43 states. And, you know, our main thing, if you will, is just staying focused on delivering quality care and helping the people that are having a hard time finding access.
Okay. So are you just telehealth virtual clinics, or do you have clinics where people can come in and speak to your providers?
And we're 100% virtual.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. And so we're embedded in many cases. We are the behavioral health medical group or prescribers in the clinic or the hospital. We find ourselves often doing transformation work around behavioral health, probably the most common setting where the story is that it's not working for the patients. The wait times are incredibly long.
Right.
For months, escalations are happening. You know, no one's being served. Nobody's happy. The clinicians aren't happy. The patients aren't happy. And so we work very hard to balance, you know, in a financially sustainable way, right? No money, no pay.
Oh, right.
We're like any other provider, you know, reimbursement is tight. And so we're very, very efficient. And that's why we're so focused. That's why we do what we do. And all our energies, you know, aimed at helping our partners, you know, the health system or the community facility be successful.
Okay. Great. And as we said, you know, I've had some behavioral health providers on before. And so, you know, I guess my first question is, what sets Iris apart from other providers in the behavioral health space?
Yeah. So Iris really brings a complete management practice from Epic templates through industry best practice, KPIs and analytic framework out of the box. So business intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
With the idea that all of this happens inside of the EMR of our customer. So we don't move people to our website or take the patient away. Our job is to strengthen the health system, keep the patient inside of their network, inside of their community, whether it's a CMHC or an FQHC or a large health system. That's hard to do. And so we set ourselves apart by the breadth of the problem and the depth of the SMI that we'll do. You know, the emergency department is one of the most challenging environments.
For absolutely. Yeah.
So we really are an end-to-end, top to bottom provider. There are very, very few people that across the spectrum of what we do that match us, if you will. And I wish there were 1,000 companies that did. Like, you know, this is not some game. So I say that with great respect for everyone who's focused on the diagnoses like OCD, or graphic like children. So, you know, this is a very collegial part of healthcare, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Hey, you know, I know we were talking, you mentioned ED, and of course we see that issue in my hospital as well. So how do you go about the challenge of trying to find placement? You know, when you are a truly virtual clinic and the dearth of behavioral health beds, certainly in Texas, but all across the country, how are you going about that?
Yeah, so during our implementation, and on a quarterly and an annual basis, we are working with the leadership of the hospital itself, being that we understand the community very well, right? Many of our, 2/3 of our customers are FQHDs or CMHDs, right? So we actually map out their network of available resources. There are platforms like Open Beds. And so we find those partners and bring them into these discussions to say, let's help navigate and make sure that when we discharge together, that there's a supporting structure. So often, you know, someone gets discharges with a week's, you know, worth of prescriptions and they have to see a psychiatrist and they can't. So how do we make sure we close that workflow gap, that transition? Mm-hmm. We all know transitions of care are dangerous and hard and difficult, but it's really the coordination from the beginning when you design it, Kevin, and say, we're going to solve this problem the right way. Mm-hmm. When we don't know the answer, we find a partner, we will bring it to the hospital and say, we think one or two of these partners could be good partners to fill this gap. And so we're very open that way. And as a result, you know, we use everything that the hospital or the clinic uses today. Any partner, any technology, bring it forward. Like, don't rebuy something or don't re-implement. Let's work with those partners collaboratively.
Okay.
And that's really the answer.
Okay.
It works.
So I'm just trying to clarify for me. So let's say, okay, you're working with Hospital X. You know, your teleproviders are working in the ED, you know, and then that patient is moved upstairs for a medical reason. I'm assuming you follow that patient through that process. And then that patient is discharged. Let's say they're fortunate. They can be discharged home with decent family support, but they still need that outpatient component. Do you provide that as well?
Yeah. So with a hospital, we would say we should provide collaboratively.
Yes.
You know, 10 to 12 weeks of therapy based on his diagnosis. And so that's what we'll do.
Okay.
And we'll do that in their EMR. And so that there's full transparency on the patient journey. If somebody, unfortunately, some other adverse event shows up, you know, the cardiologist can see everything.
Yeah.
And that's why we really never built our own EMR. We never adopted one because the continuity of and certain privacy around behavioral health data is hard enough already, right? You're breaking glass to see that, but it's available. And appropriately, there are protocols that allow the cardiologist to see that. And it certainly is critical information in some cases itself.
Yeah, in one of your posts, you were talking about, you know, how health systems aren't necessarily optimized for efficiency, patient experience, and financial sustainability. I'll just have to say amen to that. But how is Iris leveraging AI to be able to combat those issues? Because that's what, you know, as an operator, I'm looking for, how can we be as efficient as possible with, you know, with a scarcity of resources, but also making sure that patient experience is optimal. And as you so astutely said, you know, we got to make a little bit of money to keep the doors open.
Yeah. So let's take a very practical problem. The referral queue is months long.
Mm-hmm.
It's typically managed in a first in, first out basis, right? The newest referral in 3 months, that's how it works. So we developed an ML algorithm as part of our AI platform to actually curate that list based on risk, the probability of ED utilization, their therapy, their history, the CPT codes, demographics, their background, all of those elements. And so you really can effectively start to take this really constrained resource, behavioral health access, and help people from escalating and maintaining. Digital tools would be another. We can direct a digital CBT platform to me as an example, and we can use AI to help determine if I'm a good candidate for that or not. Mm-hmm. There's always in the middle, though, Kevin. I just want to say this thing. Our strategy is a human in the loop. We want to make sure that these are advised, whether it's our clinician or our customer's clinician. We still view it as intelligence to support a predictive model.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of efficiencies to be gained. We've seen tremendous results from what I would consider a fairly, very simple application of AI.
Okay. Interesting. So let's talk a little bit. Yeah, you mentioned health systems, FQHCs. What are some of your other customers again, your clients?
Yeah, so we large national IDNs,
okay,
hospitals,
mm-hmm,
both urban and rural. The CMHCs at the county level probably are some of the most difficult.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, and it seems like every episode I have, we talk about access to care. And behavioral health access in rural markets, rural Texas, I know specifically, is abysmal. So
right. You
know, let's talk a little bit about that.
So we support a lot of the CMHCs that are down around the border.
Mm-hmm.
Southwest Texas, a lot of customers are there.
Yeah. And
we are collaboratively with the practice managers that are on the ground, helping them manage the relationship with the FQHCs and the primary care clinicians. You know, a lot of migrant workers. It's just a huge influx of demand, very diverse population.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us, with strong technology, great analytics, and a very tight virtual and on-premise, a CMHC might have 15 locations 30 miles apart from each other.
Yeah.
Right across counties. And so if someone no-shows in facility number one, we can virtually, in a minute, be 30 miles away and see patient two.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do that physically.
Well, that's
that lost productivity forever. That hour of that psychiatrist will never be recovered.
Yeah. Right?
And so that's a good example of why we have a role, why virtual. I'm going to say any virtual technology, whether it's done by the health system themselves or through a partner like us, especially in behavioral health, right? You said this earlier. I thought it was very, very prescient that, you know, behavioral health is one of these indications. Very few biomarkers can deliver high quality outcomes virtually in behavioral health a high percentage of the time.
Yeah. Well, and I noticed, you know, again, on your website, looking at your services, you know, I see on-demand services. Talk to me a little bit about that, because you just hit the nail on the head. I actually encountered something today that it was an immediate event from someone who had no pre-existing behavioral health issues. I mean, something just triggered them. How can we, you know, how could a hospital, how could your clients utilize you, you know, in that immediate sense?
That's right. So we have a partnership. I'll use as an example. I know they won't mind. Don Ziegler up at Geisinger is doing tremendous work.
Mm-hmm.
Our entire team, you know, we designed in the beginning their referral queue process to allow for immediate escalation by a therapist
in the
middle of a PHQ-9 starts ideating.
Yeah.
Like, hey, this is not going well. I need help immediately. Red button. And we can transition a prescriber into that encounter
with
never ending. Now, the only way that happens is you plan for that access.
Yeah.
So our demand service is intended to have enough flex that, as you just properly noted, we know we're going to deal with emergencies. It's the nature of our business.
Right.
Right. And so we built in that capacity buffer, if you will, to be able to respond for, you know, for the kind of patient engagement that's needed to find. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do. It's a tricky thing. And I give props to our team and our counterparts in these emergency departments. You know how challenging that environment is.
Yeah. Well, that's absolutely right. You know, we, you know, all hospitals face that issue of having to hold behavioral health patients. And so any assistance that we can get, you know, from someone, you know, whether it's, and we use telebehavioral health as well. And it, you know, it really is a great model for us,
yeah.
You know, in our county, We have a real deficit in providers, like unfortunately most counties across the country. And so, talk a little bit more about, you know, I keep going back to the AI piece. You know, I'm always fascinated with that. And it seems like that my audience is too. So expand a little bit more on, you know, like, how that is going to continue to help your clients and more importantly, the patient.
That's right. So let's separate AI from ML.
Yeah.
Machine. And, you know, on the ML, like all of the efficiency and revenue cycle and the benefit of getting, you know, money, that whole process is going to benefit tremendously. Just like, you know, RPA back the last 30 years has been delivering superior outcomes. So there's a lot of exciting work there. Let's talk about generative AI. So natural language processing, you know, you go to, you know, Epic, and these tools are naturally being embedded scribes. What's interesting is that the co-pilot idea, in the middle of the encounter, there are AI agents that we're evaluating ourselves that can listen to me, and in a series of 4-second bursts over 30 seconds, it can create a pattern, and it can tell me as the how my patient is doing predictively. So think about the length of a primary care encounter, 7 minutes, right?
Yeah, if you're lucky. Yeah.
If you're lucky. And usually halfway through, maybe 3/4, the spidey sense is going off. Like, maybe there's something else going on here, right? But you can imagine if all of a sudden you had a blinking right saying, hey, you may have a different issue here that's underneath, it's not physically representing, it's hard to capture, and AI can assist is the answer. Like, we haven't proved them, we're not going to let them alone. We're not going to let these AI things make decisions. But boy, wouldn't you like to know if you could?
Yeah.
Right? Dramatically change the outcome of that encounter. Especially if, as a lot of facilities do, there's a therapist down the hall.
Sure.
You know, so you can say, hey, can you have so-and-so come in? And now all of a sudden, the outcome changes dramatically. So many times, a patient will say, I never knew I got a referral for therapy. Why? Like, because it was obvious to the clinician, but not so obvious to the patient.
Yeah.
They didn't have time to educate them. So I'm a huge, excited advocate for AI. And you could go to almost every step of the encounter, as long as there's a human in the middle.
Yeah.
It's like, let's just treat it what it is. It's going to make mistakes. It's going to hallucinate, but it can inform. And I think we're going to go through a year or two of IRBs done by venture groups. And a University Hospital is doing some really exciting stuff there, as are many. And we're going to start to see some really clear, crisp, you know, use cases that I think they're going to be real good wins for everybody.
Yeah. Well, on my previous episode, I spoke with somebody who is doing continuous cardiac monitoring, utilizing AI, partnering with Mayo to bring that to the hospital setting. They're now doing an outpatient setting. And he made a great point. He said, you know, number one, going back to efficiency, you know, think about the number of times that a nurse goes into a room to check vitals. And you know, sometimes it's wrong, unfortunately, and it's episodic. And so now with that continuous monitoring, you know, through AI and utilizing AI tools, then you get to develop that pattern. It sounds like, you know, you guys are doing the very same thing with that limited time encounter, being able to predict, hey, you know, with pretty good certainty, this is where this patient is going to go. So
that's right.
Yeah.
It's exciting. And there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of uncertainty and there's
absolutely.
A lot of
yeah.
What innovation did not suffer those maladies, right? I mean, this common path for us. We can do this.
Yeah. And I look at it, you know, we're always talking about, hey, we've got a nursing shortage. We've got a physician shortage. You know, that's not going to go away. So we've got to find options. And, you know, it's not that people are going to lose their jobs. It's going to be, you know, we're going to be able to provide greater access. And that's what we need to be all about.
I'm all in on that.
Okay.
I love that, Kevin.
Okay. So I'm a big culture guy. I like talking about cultures. Again, looking at your website, and you probably know where I'm going to go with this. I love, you know, your value statement. You got three values. Two of them are sure. Yeah. Those are slam dunk, mom and apple pie. people over all else. Execution is king and queen. But it's your second one that I love. It's SLED. I'm going to let you explain the acronym. And you got to tell me more about SLED, because I just laughed out loud when I read it.
Well, you know, look, teamwork makes the dream work.
Yeah, there you go.
Right. And so SLED means suck less every day. And, you know, it's a worthy goal, right? I mean,
right?
A little bit better. So look, what does it mean practically inside the house here?
Yeah.
It just means that we're human and we're going to make mistakes. And it means that learn from them. Don't just keep repeating there. Sure. I did it again. That's not what it means. It means that as long as I own me and I'm vulnerable enough, everyone's going to say, it's okay, Andy. Like, it's okay to make a mistake. You did it with the right intent. You did it with the right spirit, doing the right thing. And let's give each other a little bit of grace that we're human and we're running fast. We're doing hard things that a lot of people don't think are going to work, or, you know, there's skepticism. Don't let that get you down. Just keep doing the right thing. And it's particularly effective for us as a company to do that. So
that's great. Oh, yeah, I really enjoyed that one. I've seen some really nice value statements. That one is in the top three or four I've ever seen. So I like that.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
In our last few minutes, Andy, talk a little bit more about, you know, what's the ideal customer for you, and how can potential clients contact you for more information?
You know, look, anybody that is struggling with a long referral queue should call us.
Okay.
We'll help you. Like, we'll tell you, like, here's the playbook. Here's what we think you should do. You don't have to be a customer of ours for us to coach you or share best practices, introduce you to other colleagues that have had similar issues. You know, that's who we are.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we have a very large commercial organization. We cover the United States. We have a large clinical footprint. We cover, you know, 43 states. So we'll find something in common where we can at least direct you to people that we think have a pretty good handle on this. But number one, if you're struggling with a strong, you know, high referral queue, call us. We'll help you think through that. Mm-hmm. Second, if you're thinking about an enterprise strategy, like, the whole system needs to be rethought.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, they probably mean we have a lot of partners. Call us. Again, we'll help share a roadmap. You don't have to do that with us. Like, but we've learned over 11 years of doing this how all of the parts hang together.
Yeah.
Revenue cycle, the payer mix, the primary care, both employed and affiliated. How do you manage the network? How do you protect your brand, your direct-to-employer contracts?
Mm-hmm.
Problems. And so we believe the approach that small or large, we're at a point where you have to be thinking enterprise-wide. You have to think about the transformative moment, and there are plenty of partners out there that can help you do it. And so we're more than happy to help be a thought leader or help in any way you can. And if it grows into a relationship, that's wonderful. And if not, it's great we know each other.
Hey, that sounds great. I appreciate that. So if anybody needs more information, I'm assuming you would direct them to your website, iristelehealth.com, right?
Yes, sir.
Excellent. Okay. Excellent. Any final words before we sign off here?
No, I appreciate what you're doing here. You know, the thing in healthcare is that, you know, proven practices get our attention, but we need to be focused on promising practices. And that's what you're talking about on all your episodes. So that's why I appreciate being here.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Andy. Well, folks, yeah, I've enjoyed talking today with Andy Flanagan, CEO of Iris Telehealth. It's amazing, right? What's going on in within AI, within all of healthcare. But now you've heard a little bit more about what's happening in the behavioral healthcare space. So, look that up a little bit. Look up Andy and his folks at Iris Telehealth. And, we will see you next time on I Don't Care with me, Kevin Stevenson. Have a great day.